Blog Talk Radio.
Radio show. This is Steve, webmaster for PetGroomer.com. And today, for the timeline marker here, it is Saturday, February 3rd of the year 2018. We're going to have a special guest today, Jody Murphy. But before we bring Jody online, we'll just bring you up to date with what's going on at Groomer Talk. We have a contest that's still running through February 14th, yep, right through Valentine's Day. We call it the Famous Sweethearts Contest because there's a lot of trivia related to that. By playing the trivia, you can win extra tickets in the drawing. But what else is this? This is the Kinchy Shears Contest. And we're going to have three winners. So three names will be drawn, three winners. And each winner is going to get $100 credit toward buying Kinchy Shears. And what else, by the way, in all, to actually enter that, very easy. Just any activity on the message board, as long as you're 18 years of age or older, that activity, every time you post a message or reply, you get entered in the drawing. So we have quite a few people, but with three people winning, improves your odds. Coming up next, right after that, I'm pleased to say that Wall is returning with Pay It Forward contest. And starting on February 15th, and it'll run about 6 weeks. Similar way, you just post on the board, and there'll probably be trivia to win extra tickets in the drawing. But the nice thing is one person will win two Wall Vera clippers. Now, a pay it forward means that one of the clippers goes to the winner, and the winner also gets to choose to donate one pair of the clippers to, could be a groomer in need, it could be a local rescue, whatever you choose, just some nice charity, someone in need, and we want to thank Wall for bringing that back. We're going to have at least two of those contests this year. Who knows, maybe more. And coming up, in fact, we're just about at the beginning of the Double K Rags to Riches contest, so there's going to be a lot of activity for spring as usual. Now, let me bring on Jody Murphy here. First, for those of you that may not know Jody Murphy, if that is possible, she is a two-time master pet stylist, a national certified master groomer through the NDGA, as well as an MPS Meritus, that's a master pet stylist meritus, through the International Society of Canine Cosmetology. She is a multiple best all-around and best-in-show competitor. These titles allow Jody to certify groomers to their master pet stylist status throughout the USA. She was a Group Team USA member for 4 years and ranked within the top four pet stylists of the United States. Most of you may know her for her JodyMurphy.net website, where she offers competitively priced instructional grooming DVDs, home study DVD packages, mobile grooming success seminar DVDs, grooming apparel, and also tools of the trade. So we'll be talking a little bit more about that and giving you more contact info. But in this moment, let's go. Yep, she's here. I'm going to open her line. Jody, you should be online now.
Hi, Stephen. How are you?
Hi. I'm doing real good. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thanks.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. Well, you know, I was checking, and we are going to have questions for you today, by the way.
Okay.
A lot of them just came in late, and I hadn't checked on it. So let's start off by just something on the side here. I noticed something about you have a new Cocker Spaniel.
Yes, I do. His name
Can you
is
tell
Justin.
Us more?
Yeah, his name is Justin. He's a black and tan. You know, I've had Cockers since I've been 21, and they've always been my love. And, you know, that's where I've competed with them. I've won with them overseas in the world tournaments, and they've just always been my thing. And I guess my last Cocker passed away several years ago, and I haven't had one for quite a while. And, you know, I was starting to feel it, you know. I just had my little toy neck, and so anyway, my girlfriend, that she's a breeder and handler, Laura Heidrich, she's out in Chicago. She had contacted me a few months ago and said, why don't you come out to our dog show? You haven't been here in a long time. And I was like, all right, I'll come out. So I went out and spent the weekend with her at one of her dog shows, and she was showing him, and he was a year in October, so he's a year and a few months. And he's just so pretty. And I always had a love for black and tans. I just think they're so beautiful. And so I said to her, oh, my gosh, he's such a nice dog. And he was so sweet. And so she said, well, you know, he's a Finnish champion. I'm just trying to get his, you know, his grand championship title. And he only needs one more win. So why don't you take him home? So I was like, she goes, I can't do anything with him until he's two anyway, because she wants to breed him. But, you know, they don't start breeding them until they check their eyes and their hips. And they don't like to do that until they're about 2 years old. So she said, take them home, have fun with them. You know, when I want to breed them, you can, you know, bring them back and I'll use them and send them back to you. So we kind of had this arrangement. So, a couple weekends later, she called me up. She goes, well, I got his grand championship, so you can take him anytime. So I went out there in Arena Thanksgiving weekend, and I picked him up and brought him home. And he's just a sweetheart. He's beautiful, beautiful dog, beautiful hair. So, you know, it's now I've been having fun grooming him, and it's just really kind of giving me that little bit of a nudge to get back into the contest ring. You know?
And so you might be doing that, huh?
I don't know. You never know. I might have to jump in here and there. You know, but the funny thing is, you know, I was talking to my daughter and Mackenzie, and I was saying to her, you know, wouldn't it be great if we could be on a traveling team together? And she's laughing because she's focusing on her Bedlington right now, because groom team has changed the way that they do their point tabulation now. So, you know, for years, up until this past year, it was always the top point holders that made the top 10. And then the traveling team were the top four point holders. So now they've changed things. So it's not the top point holders. It's whoever wins the most out of each group. So whoever wins the most in sporting will go and represent the team with sporting. Whoever wins the most wins in poodles will go and represent the team with poodles, so like that. So it's really, it's helped where you don't have to go there and enter every class and try to accumulate all these wins, you know. So it made it a lot easier for people that are really want to focus on one breed. So anyway, so because of that, you know, really I could just jump in there and do a few contests here and there and try to win the sporting class. What am I, crazy? I know, right? You know, like, I have nothing better to do, right, Stephen?
Exactly. I know your schedule is wide open here, right? Well,
I
know.
It would be one of those things that, for me as a mother, to be on a traveling team with my daughter would just be
phenomenal.
Sure.
And that's family. So that's pretty cool. That'd be a neat thing to do. That's it. You're creating a real good memory that way. So
yeah,
you might move some things around there. Yeah.
I highly doubt it. It's just one of those things that's in the back of my mind. That's all.
Cool.
But anyway, so I'm having fun with him. He's great. In fact, when I go into the contest ring, when I'm judging and stuff, I see a lot of people have trouble, you know, getting the crowns of their heads straight and get them to lay back and to look nice. And so I was giving him a bath on last weekend, and I thought, let me just videotape blow drying the top of his head, because I'm always trying to explain to people how to break waves. And I was giving a lesson to a girl in Canada a couple weeks ago, and she was having the same trouble with the crown, and I was trying to explain to her how to dry it. So I thought, let me just do this. And I did this quick video, and I got, the last time I looked, I had 5.4 thousand views on how to dry a head, you know? So, you know, it's great. It's great. So I love that. So
cool.
I hope to do more and more of those little fun tips to help people out.
Yeah, that's cool. And actually, it's going to be sort of what I'm going to be bringing up later today is on questions on the show here. They're technique-type questions for the most part here.
Okay.
But let's talk about what you've been doing with the business a little. I hear you're going to do something with carding knives now.
Yeah, my carding knives just came in. And, you know, it's funny because I used to always use, you know, for the sporting dogs and for your pets and your terriers and things, you know, carding is so important for healthy skin and coat. And so I preach it all the time in all my seminars and, you know, whenever I'm doing those type of breeds. And I was always a fan of the classic knives, which were from England, and they discontinued them years ago. But I always had my own. I like multiple sets of them. And every time I'm doing seminars, people are always asking me, where do I get them? And it's so hard to tell people what to get because the other knives that are out there for carding are not the same. They don't pull coat the same. So for me, it's frustrating when I try to use different knives because there's nothing like the classic. So this whole past year, all the seminars that I did, I was getting frustrated trying to figure out what to tell people to buy. So I just decided to make my own. So I did. And they came in, a couple months ago now. And I have them available in coarse and fine. And I made a unique double-sided knife that has a fine on one side and a coarse on the other. So I designed that. So, so they're out right now. They're up on my website and they work great. And they're really the next best thing to the classic. So I'm excited about that. I've been shipping them all over the world. Australia has been putting tons of orders in for them. So everybody seems to love them. So it's been great.
Well, since you mentioned Australia, are you going back again? You've been doing, you know what, in the last few years, I know you've made several trips.
Yeah, this is my fifth trip to Australia. And I just love it. I just love it out there. The people are just fabulous. And Australia is just a beautiful country. And I just love it. They're just, it's great. So this time I'm going in April. And we're going to be doing a tour this time around. So we'll be going to Sydney first, and then we'll be going up the West Coast to Perth. So so that'll be a lot of fun. So we're planning that right now.
How, because you're a mobile groomer, have you met mobile groomers there?
Yeah, I did. You know, and it's funny because the mobile groomers, when I first started going out there, they were really behind on their mobile grooming as opposed to here where we are. Mobile grooming is very big here. And you know, my first visit out there, the mobile was getting a really slow start. And from what the girls were telling me, they were getting kind of that bad reputation because a lot of people just that weren't even groomers would just buy these trailers and go and say that they were a groomer and just, you know, wash dogs, backyard dogs and that kind of stuff. And so they were getting that reputation as, oh, if you're a mobile groomer, you're not really a real groomer. You know, you're just one of the backyard people that washes dogs. And that's the reputation they were getting. So they've come a long way since. Now they're getting more respect and they're really, they're doing much better with their mobile grooming. So they're doing great, and their units have improved now. The units that they have out there are getting really nice and more sophisticated. So they're doing great. But it's amazing because, you know, when you sit back and you watch the progression, that first year I went out there, I was like, oh, my gosh, I felt so bad for them, trying to help them and you know, help them how to really get out of that, that rut that they were in. So now when I go there, they've come a long way. So they're doing great. And the people out there, they're so eager for knowledge. You know, they're just so receptive, and they're the nicest people you ever want to meet. And I feel like I have so many friends out there, and I can't wait to go back and see them every year. They're just really, really fabulous people. And even in New Zealand, I don't want to leave my Kiwis out because I love them too. And New Zealand, I've been to New Zealand once, and I love it there too. And the people, the same thing, same way, just real nice. And when I was there the last time, they actually had one of their news cameramen come out and interview me, and they came to the show, and they videotaped me doing the seminars and interviewed me outside, and it was fun. And I was on the 6 o'clock news that night. I have that video on my website, actually. It was fun. So that was really cool.
That sounds like a lot of fun. I've been there twice, and same thing. There was a time in my life when I was flying for business, and I very much enjoyed Australia and the people. There are some characters, and just a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
I love listening to them talk. I just love it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, but like some say, you don't always understand if they're really using their lingo among themselves. You may not understand in everything that they're saying, but you'll get the idea in general.
Yeah.
they really do have a lingo.
Yeah, they have a lingo, you know, and I've come to figure it out. But in the beginning, when I first started going, I'd be up on stage and I'd go to the girls in the front. What did she just say? What does that mean?
Exactly.
I had no clue what they were talking about, you know, and they were just all laughing, you know. So now I understand it a lot better. But it's so fun. It's so fun to be thrown into a different country like that and learning things like that. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So.
Well, now you're so well known, of course, for your videos. How's the video educational ones going?
Well, the videos are doing good. I actually just did, I finally just had to sit down and make time to make a bunch of new videos. So I did that. I have 9 new releases coming, which brings me up well over 50 titles now. Last year I did my dog grooming simplified seminars all over the country. And it's a 4-hour program that I did, and it was all about my book and how, you know, going over structure and going over the different, you know, patterns and how they apply to so many different breeds. And so I did that all over at the different shows last year, and it went over really well. So I decided to put that on video. So it's going to be, I don't even know how long it's going to be, but It's probably going to be at least 6 hours long, I would imagine. But it's all on video, where I talked about the structure, and we went into each pattern group, and I groomed each pattern and different head styles and things like that. So that's going to be all on video. So I'm excited about that, because every time I did that program everywhere, I mean, people would come to me and say, oh, my gosh, it's like the light bulb just went on. And you don't really – until you really see it, it doesn't click. And I know my book, the way my book is laid out is very different than the other grooming books, and it's all by pattern similarities. And so this video is really going to help, I think, people really see it. So so that's going to be coming out. I'm hoping that they'll be out for the Atlanta Pet Fair coming up here in March. I should have everything ready for that show. I'm pushing for it anyway. So I have that one, and then I also have, I did a poodle competition series, and that consists of 3 videos. I did the continental trim, the German trim, and the modern trim. So I have those 3, and then I also did a English Cocker pet trim and an English Cocker show trim, and I did a Springer Spaniel show trim and a Springer Spaniel pet trim, and I also did an Asian Fusion trim. So those are my new releases coming very soon, so I'm excited about them.
Great. That's great to see it. That it keeps expanding. That's keeping Jody busy. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to move into a few of the questions that are here. And I'm just going to do my best because sometimes the way these are worded, I'm not going to read them verbatim. So I got Anne from New York is asking about skimming. How much do you use skimming? Why skimming? I think that what she's saying is she's more of a beginner and she's heard about skimming and really wants to understand skimming and when do you use it and is it productive? Is it a good thing to do?
Well, you can skim in two ways. You can skim with a blade and you can skim with snap-on combs. So skimming with a blade, that takes a little bit of practice. You know, you have to have a very steady hand to do it. I do a lot of skimming with a blade when I'm doing underlines. So what you would do is take your, like, a 40 blade, and you can, like, say if you're setting in your tuck up and your underline, and you have some, you know how you just have those little wispy pieces here and there, and it's easier to take, like, your Walververe or clipper and get in there with a 40 and just kind of tip those little straggly hairs off with the 40 rather than get in there with your scissor and try to scissor it. So I skim with my 40 a lot when it comes to that. If you see any stray hairs, you can like skim the neck of your poodle in with a 40 blade. You just, you know, lightly skim over the top and it helps get all the wispies off, but it takes a very steady hand to do that. So, but that's with skimming with a blade. Now skimming with a snap-on comb, I skim all the time, and what that means is you're really sculpting, and it saves a lot of time where you're not changing from one length to another. So a lot of times when you want an area short, you'll press down hard, you know, press all the way down to the skin to get that length you want. But there may be other areas, like, say, your skirt. Like, say, for instance, you're doing a Wheaton, and it's a drop coat, and you're trying to go over your rib cage and trying to get your skirt to you know, taper in over the rib cage, you can take your snap-on comb and go tighter over the ribs and then kind of fall off and skim off down to the bottom of your skirt, and it kind of layers that. So you don't always have to use your snap-on combs close to your skin. Like, you don't have to always push down hard. You can have a lighter hand and skim, and so if you want certain areas longer, you wouldn't use as much pressure. You'd back off a little bit. So that's what skimming is with a snap-on comb. And again, if you're new, that's something that is going to come with practice and with more experience. Okay, so even when I do my rear angulation, I'll scoop in real tight at the bend of the leg, and then I skim out over the hock. So it just eliminates a lot of extra scissoring and changing your snap-on combs to a different length. But it does come with practice. It's not as easy as it sounds.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned as far as she had used the word. I was a second question you were asking about when to apply pressure. So I think you answered that same question.
It just depends on how short you want that area, you know. But, like, say if you're scissoring column legs, like your front legs are in columns, well, you wouldn't want to push in really hard with the snap-on comb because you might take too much off. So you can kind of skim those columns in with the snap-on, you know, to make a line, to pretend you're making a straight line with the snap-on rather than push it against the leg.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes. And she noted here, do you prefer the stainless steel or the plastic combs?
I like the wall stainless steel combs. I mean, that's what I prefer. And I use the Brevera a lot, like on a lot of smaller breeds. I mean, it's not a full-size clipper, but you can get through a lot of coat with it. But so they have their own set of snap-on combs that kind of slip over the blade. And then you have your other set that goes with your full speed clippers. So there's two different types of stainless steel that Wahl makes, depending on what clipper you use. But I use both.
Okay. Great. Now,
the blade that you use under there is really going to be a personal preference, too. You can use a 10, a 15, or a 30. You know, if you've got – it just depends on the coat type and what is taking the coat better. A lot of times I'll use a 15 under under my clipper using Snap-on combs. So,
well, let's ask you to make that a little bit more specific. If I have those three choices, some of our more newbie groomers that might be here, well, okay, I might use those three different ones, but what are you making the decision based on? The coarseness of that coat or what?
You know, the density of the coat, you know, if you look at a 30 blade or a 40 blade. Now, the 40 blades you can't use on the Snap-on combs because the 40 blade's too narrow and it doesn't sit in there correctly. So, but the plastic combs, you can still use the 40 blade. But so 30, it's either a 30, a 15, or a 10 to use on the stainless. And if you look at the difference between the teeth, the 30 blade teeth are closer together, right, than your 15 or your 10. So if you're doing a really thick coat, like, you know, say a standard Pluto coat, really thick, and you're trying to get that 30 blade through it, you know, sometimes your teeth can get bogged down with all that hair and they get clogged up. So if that's the case, then I'll move to a 10 or a 15, and it just goes through the coat a little bit better. So if you find that you're dragging on the coat and it's just making lines, you may want to change your blade to like a 15. I find a 15 goes through everything nicely, you know, but if you have a finer coat, like your Yorkie or something like that, then you would want to do a 30 blade because you want it to really grab that hair because it is so silky. So it leaves a nicer finish. So it really is just depends on what is happening. Because I can't tell you, you know, use this on poodles, this on Cocker Spaniels, or this on Malteses. It's going to depend on that particular dog. So if you're using your Snap-on comb and it's like wreaking havoc on the coat, then change the blade to a different blade and see if that helps. That's the best advice I can give you.
Okay, great, Jody. Good answer. For those of you that are listening live, if you press 1 on your keypad, if you have a question for Jody, do that. It sends me a signal, and I'll bring you online. Otherwise, just continue listening. So that's a number 1 on your keypad. I have a question here. It's Mike from Massachusetts, and he's asking, and he didn't say whether he is mobile or, you know, salon groomer, but he wants to know how you charge for hand stripping.
Well, I charge per hour no matter what I do. So it depends on how long it takes me, and I have hourly rates, but I don't have one hourly rate because of that type of thing, that type of service, hand stripping, you know, because I'm not going to charge the same hourly rate that it would take me to do a Yorkie than say it would take me to do, you know, an Old English Sheepdog. You know what I'm saying? Because the bigger dogs are more strenuous, they're more work, you know, and my hourly rate for certain things are higher. So I have three different hourly rates based on the degree of difficulty of that dog. So, you know, and the way that I always looked at it, well, you know what, if I'm like exhausted at the end of the groom, then that they're getting my higher hourly rate, you know? So,
yeah.
So that's kind of how I always did it. And it always worked out well. So for hand stripping, I would, you know, see what it's worth for you. You have to, you know, it depends on what you need to make your bills and to make a profit. And that's how you have to decide, you know, where you need to be hourly. So I know a lot of people when they first start out are by breed, and you know, it's so much easier to do it hourly because this way you don't undercut yourself. And, you know, because, you know, one Cocker Spaniel could take you 45 minutes and another Cocker Spaniel could take you 2 hours. You know what I mean? Because of the coat types, you never know how long it's going to take you. You know, a lot of people that call and say, well, I have a Cockapoo. Well, that one Cockapoo could be 12 pounds. Another one could be 35, you know. So I always did it by hour, and it always worked out best for me. So, and they usually incremented by about $15. So that's how I always did it, and it always worked out really well. So,
as a mobile groomer,
I never really like to tell people that I charge hourly. When I first changed over to hourly, I was grooming this dog, and I told the lady, you know, it's, you know, this much an hour. And she came knocking on my door after an hour and asking me if I was almost done, right? So And she wanted me to stop when the hour was over. So I thought, okay, well, that's not working well. So I'm not going to tell them that it's hourly. So I know in my head how long it takes me to groom certain breeds. And so when people would call to get a quote, I would, if they called me and said, okay, I have, you know, I have a Shih Tzu. Well, I know it takes me an hour to groom a Shih Tzu from start to finish. So I felt comfortable telling, giving them a range, like about, you know, a $15, $20 range. You know, I charge anywhere between, say, $60 and $80. Give them a range so it will, you know, you have room to wiggle there, or even $15, whatever. So in my head, I knew how long it would take me to groom that particular breed. And unless the dog was, and I always tell people, you know, if your dog is in good condition, this is the price, because you don't want to get there and the dog be, you know, a mess, and then you're not even within your range that you gave them. So I always said that, you know, if your dog is in good condition, and, you know, I always ask when it was groomed last, because that's always a red flag. And then the only dogs that I did tell that I had an hourly rate were the dogs that I knew it would take me at least 2 hours, like my standard poodles, Portuguese water dogs, any of those large breeds. I would tell people, okay, it's a minimum of 2 hours, and I charge whatever, $75, $85 an hour. And you tell them up front, because this way they know right then and there, okay, well, she's telling me it's a minimum of two hours, so this is going to be at least $150. You know, because then it's up to them whether they want to use your service or not. And to be honest with you, I would rather groom two Yorkies in 2 hours than groom a standard poodle if I'm going to make more money on the two Yorkies. You know what I mean? So, So that's where you don't get, you know, beat as far as the costs go. When it comes to those larger breeds that take the time, you just have to tell them up front, it's going to take me at least 2 hours, and this is my hourly rate. And this way, you know what, if you take on that customer, that's great. You know you're getting paid for your time. So that's always how I did it. Because especially in the mobile, you know, in a shop, you know, you can do other dogs in the meantime. So you can do other dogs while your bather is drying and getting through the standard poodle. But when you're in your shop, when you're in a mobile, it's just you. So you're going to be there for 2 hours, you know, and you can't do anything else. So unless you do that, you're not going to make the money on them, you know. So you just have to do what's best for your business.
Understand. No, let me just ask a side question to that. Now, you're a mobile groomer. You kind of have a set schedule, and maybe you get to some of these new customers and you find out they've really, oh my gosh, you want that, and that's going to take double the time, yet that affects then if you're going to be delayed there for your next appointment. Do you find that's a big issue? Does that happen sometimes? And
it can, yes, it can happen, because, you know, there's always the inevitable that happens. And, you know, most of the time it happens with, you know, first-time clients. So a lot of times what I would do is put somebody that I never did before at the end of the day. So this way, if I took them first thing in the morning at 9 o'clock and I was there longer, because you don't know how the animal's going to act, if it's difficult to dry or anything like that, or if it doesn't like to be brushed. I mean, there's so many things that can slow you down with a new client. And so I found out the hard way, really, to put them at the end of the day. This way, there's no pressure. You don't have to be anywhere else. You can spend the time with them, and it won't screw up your schedule. But there's always times where you know, you get delayed because of something you didn't expect. You know, people take their dogs camping or whatever, and they come back and they're matted, and you weren't expecting it. So a lot of times it can screw up your whole day. So you have to. You know, I was pretty lucky where I always had access to my clients' houses. So most of the time they weren't home anyway, so it didn't matter whether I was delayed. But if it did, I'd call them. If I knew first thing in the day that I'm going to be delayed, I'd call everybody and tell them I'm running behind. And then I would tell them what time I was going to be there. So it never really was a problem for me. I had really great clients, but it can. So the best thing I can tell you is if you have a dog that you know it's going to take you a long time to groom, and if it's a new client, try to schedule them last. So then that takes the whole pressure off of you that you have to be somewhere, and this dog is taking you longer than you expected.
Great. Thanks, Jody. I've got a question here from Louise in Boulder, Colorado, and it's pretty general. So let's just discuss back brushing. When is it favorable for the finish work to do a back brushing, and when, like, you shouldn't be back brushing?
You know, back brushing is done when the coat just doesn't want to stand up for the snap-on comb or for the blade, and the blade is pushing, or the snap-on comb is pushing the coat down, and it's not really grabbing it well. That's like, it's mostly on your back that usually happens. And so if you take your slicker and you back brush it a little bit and then go over it again, the blade or the snap-on comb will catch it. You don't want to do it on a drop coat because once you back brush and you go over it again, it takes it pretty short. So I'm not a big fan of back brushing. I'll do it on certain areas that I need to tighten up. But what I like to do is I'll go through everything with my snap-on comb. And if I feel like it's a drop coat and the blade or the comb is missing areas, I'll take my comb in there and I'll lift it, and then I'll hit it with my thinning shears over the top. And as soon as you lift your coat up with your thinning shears, you can see what's uneven, and then I tip it. So I tend to go that route rather than back brushing. On poodle type coats, like the real curly coats, I always, after I go everything over it, everything with my snap-on comb, I mist it with a scissoring spray. I comb everything up, brush everything up again, and go over it again. So, but like on your, say your Scotties and your Westies and things like that, I think some people like to back brush because that coat is so flat against the skin that the blade kind of skip over certain areas. So that's when I think people like to back brush, but I tend to go toward the comb and the thinning shear method instead, because back brushing, it just makes the clipper catch it really, and it makes it a lot shorter than you may want it to be. But that's just my opinion. You know, everybody has their own technique, so that's just what I prefer to do.
Okay. All right. I haven't had time to really... These questions came in last minute, so I'm trying to edit it down. Okay, Noelle, she lives just outside of Portland, Oregon. She said, I've always disliked how there are shorter stripes down the legs and chest of closely shaved dogs where the pet hair grows backward. I figure I could just shave backward into those spots, but how do I determine where to start and stop?
You think she's talking about the calyx at the hair, or the hair calyx?
I would say, yeah, I think that's...
And then when you shave them, it gets too short? Is that what you think that is?
She's definitely saying when you're shaving very close, yes, closely, mm-hmm. and there's just some pet hair grows backwards.
Because it especially sometimes on the legs and near the elbows, and especially in the chest where there's the calyx right in the chest there. And if you're clipping with the grain of the way the hair lays, and all of a sudden you hit a calyx, it's going to take that super short. So and then sometimes it's hard to grab those calyx-y areas, like even in the rears, you know, on both sides of the pin bone where the hair kind of calyx on both hip bones, the pin bones back there. So a lot of times, again, I would take my thinning shears and hit those calyx instead of hitting it with the blade because it's going to really bald it. A lot of times I'll hit my thinners and tighten those calyx like that.
All right.
Once you hit them with the blade, it really takes it to the skin. So, but I think that's what she's talking about.
I think so too. Because she was talking, it makes it sort of a stripe look, and that would definitely give that kind of look.
That's what it is.
All right, thanks for the question, Noelle. Okay, here I have another one that I'm going to have to paraphrase maybe a little bit. I would like to try, quote-unquote, bulk thinning on faces. I know this could cause the hair to grow out funny or matte for those areas that poof out. I'm not sure of how close to the skin I should go on a muzzle, for example. Bulk thinning, Jody.
Yeah, it's really not a good thing to do because exactly like what she said, it causes matting. And because when you go into a muzzle and you try to take volume out, you're going in there where you're thinning shears, you're cutting, and you're leaving these short hairs behind. And it does eventually grow out kind of weird, but those short hairs and the long hairs kind of mat, they get matted together. And then when the dogs come back, sometimes you have a mess. And so if it's, and I don't really know, I'm trying to think of what breed she could be thinking about, but if it's a terrier, say if you have an Airedale and sometimes they get real woolly if they haven't been carded and the undercoat hasn't been taken out, and sometimes their beards can get real thick. Instead of going in there and undercutting and getting the bulk out, if you take like a Coat King or a stripping knife and you rake through it, comb through it with a stripping knife, you pull out some of that dead undercoat, and you're pulling it from the root and you're taking volume out that way instead of going in there and cutting. So if it's a dog that has undercoat like that, a dog with a beard or something like that, then I would tell you to go in there and rake it out instead of going in there and cutting it. So a lot of times you can do that instead. But if it's a dog like a Bichon that is, you know, you're saying is too thick, you know, you would never want to go in there and undercut. It just wouldn't look right. And it ends up to look kind of, you know, holy. It'll grow out and it'll look like you have like holes everywhere from where you went in there and undercut it. So I would try to stay away from that. They used to do undercutting a lot years ago. And it just, even on the American Cockers, when they were in full coat, you know, years ago when I first started competing with them, they used to go like up behind the elbow, and so they can define, you know, where the front leg separates from the side coat. So they would go like up in the loin to separate the rear leg from the side coat, and then everybody realized that the dogs were matting, and they finally realized why that was happening. So you never want, that's where I learned that about the matting is from the Cocker world, because that's where they were having all kind of problems, and it was from undercutting. And they used to undercut like that with Wheatons too, to try to get the coat to lay down. They'd go in there and undercut everywhere and undercut in the beards, and it just leaves a mess. So you try to stay away from that if you can.
Okay, thank you, Jody. That was from Anna in Laredo, Texas. And we're moving on to yet another here. We have someone who's shedding some tears because she has more than once, while scissoring the pads, has nicked them bad enough to make it bleed pretty well. And she's wondering what she's probably doing wrong or any safety tips.
Well, now, if you're, I always use a 40 blade. I use my Riviera clipper with the shortest setting, which is the 40 blade setting, to shave my pads. I don't like to put a scissor near the pads. Now, if you're saying that you're nicking the pads when you're scissoring the foot, at that point, you just have to really pay attention to what you're doing, because I always used to say, you know, you never want to cut unless you know exactly what you're cutting. You know how when you're scissoring a foot and you're going on in between the two front legs, around into the inside of the foot, and you just want to take that last cut, but you really can't see where you're cutting, but you know you need to cut right there. Like, I would always stop. I would never close that scissor unless I could see exactly what I was cutting. And I know a lot of times we're in a hurry and we're trying to scissor that foot, you just take that last cut on the inside and you don't really know where the tip of your shear is. And it just comes down to being careful and to make sure you know where your scissor is at all times, because it's so easy to cut something like that. So, but if you're saying that you're cutting it because you're cutting, you know, the coat between the pads, you just don't ever want to scissor that, especially if you have that trouble. I can scissor pads, but, you know, I wouldn't recommend it, especially to new people. Use that 40 blade, let it do the work for you. And when you're scissoring, you know, your feet, I always scissor with the foot down, the dog standing. I scissor the whole base of the foot. I scissor the entire leg exactly the way I want it with the dog standing. And then at the end, I'll pick the feet up, and then I'll lightly neaten up the base of the foot. So you just have to be careful, you know, that's it. A lot of times we're in a hurry and accidents happen, but I've been pretty lucky, you know, I've never really had any issues with that. So, but I'm super cautious because when I was first learning, there was a girl that was learning with me that used to cut dogs constantly, and it scared me so badly. And this was when I was very, very new. And I used to say to the grooming manager there, just tell me why this is happening because I never want to do that, you know. And it's just like, it was like, oh, my God, why is this happening? If I ever did that, I would just die. So I think because of that, it just always made me super, super cautious. And so I've never had that issue, but it can happen. It happens to the best of us. So just be careful. That's all I can say. Just make sure you know where your tip of your scissor is at all times.
And, you know, holding paws, it's up off the ground. There's the amount of opportunity for it to move. Why not do the clipper, the 40 blade, like you're saying, because they can, you never know, they're going to jerk on the, just move their paw on you. It's so much different than having a steadily, you know, holding pet there. So myself, I did the clippers too.
Mm-hmm. And I think that once you scissor the whole leg, once your leg is completely finished, you've got all that excess hair off. So now you can see your foot better anyway. So now, you know, the leg is completely groomed, then you pick it up, and then you neaten your base. But exactly. I think if you pick your foot up first and you scissor your base and you've got a lot of excess hair, you may not be able to see the pad very well, and that's where you can easily nick it. So I tend to do the very cleanup of the base last, and then I can see exactly what needs to come off.
We had this topic was coming up. We get some people that come in on the message board, and they feel bad when they do these cuts. But we had one interesting comment this week that one lady was teaching someone, and she had the instinct to have this person go get her eyes checked because she was constantly doing little nicks, nothing real serious, but constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I've never had my eyes checked, and she got glasses. And the accuracy of the depth of field and everything, she stopped doing all these clicks. She just had never had her eyesight tested.
And wow.
So interesting. I would have never thought of that. Yep. Yep.
Oh, wow.
Let's see. We're not done here yet. Well, actually, this is one we also have. This may have been even from the board. Someone... shortening beards on like miniature schnauzers, any kind of dog that collects food in water, you know, and they drip, drip, drip. So they say they get more and more clientele. These aren't show dogs. They just want them a manageable beard to keep a lot of food out of them and water from dripping all over the place. And we have had some people post some pictures of how they've shortened them. Any hints on shortening beards like on that, what do you use? Are you going to do scissors, or are you going to use a blade, or what do you do, like, say, on a miniature schnauzer?
Well, you know, a lot of, especially like a miniature schnauzer, if you take the hair really short under the chin, it's going to get real full, you know. So in that case, I wouldn't blunt it under the chin short. I would use snap-on combs and kind of sculpt it in and make it look nice and tidy that way. So it's going to depend on how thick. Because, you know, when you get your hair cut and all of a sudden it feels like really thick and full. So it's the same kind of thing. If you take a beard up really short and you don't layer it, it's going to like poof out. It's going to be real thick to the sides. And so in that case, whenever I shorten any beards, because I get that all the time too, you know, a lot of people don't like the dogs dripping water all over the place. So I would take it shorter, and then I use my snap-on comb and sculpt in the top of the muzzle, kind of layer it. You can even use your thinning shears that way and just sculpt it in. So it's nice and tidy, and, you know, you can still get the little bit of a beard effect, but it's going to be more manageable and tidier. So I would use snap-on combs in that case and do it that way.
Okay.
It just depends on the coat and how it's falling. And if it's a thinner coat, you might be able to get away with it doing just a blunt cut underneath. But you'll see what I mean. I'm sure you know what I mean. They get real thick. So that's when I would just taper in the top of the muzzle, you know, make it look like that. I have an Airedale that I do that way because she gets horrible under her chin. It's just terrible. So I take the whole muzzle with a snap on. I make it nice and tight and tapered, and it looks really neat. So.
Okay, I have a question. It looks like Eddie, and it's not a real specific question, but how do you do Yorkie legs? What's the kind of look that you like on a Yorkie?
Well, if you're talking about a really, you know, the difficult Yorkie legs, the real fine hair, the silky hair that everybody struggles with. You know, some of them have the nice thick hair and you can get a nice column look, but then you have the majority of them that are real stringy and silky. So I don't like to cut into the front of the legs because as soon as you cut into the front of the legs and you know, and make them real short, it looks terrible. It starts getting, it just looks uneven and choppy and it looks a mess. So I tend to let the whole front of the leg grow all the way down to the ground. So the whole front of the leg from the upper arm all the way down, I grow one length. And then the back of the leg I trim short, and the inside and the outside of the leg I start to, you know, come around and meet the front. So it looks really cute, and it looks nice and neat, and the front of the leg doesn't mat. And it just falls beautifully. I mean, I just love the way it looks. And so I do that a lot on my Yorkies because I don't like to cut into the front of that leg. So, and I mean, you can keep the rest of the dog short and the back legs. When I do this, I do almost like, you know, just like a terrier type back leg pattern, like a schnauzer back leg pattern where you take your thigh in tight and you leave the furnishings off the knee. And you leave a little hawk hair, you know, the same thing, the inside of the back legs I take tight, just like a schnauzer. But I leave the knee hair, leave a little bit of foot hair, and leave the whole front of the leg one length all the way down to the toes, and take the back of the leg and the inside and outside of the leg a little bit tighter. But you have to kind of blend that all together. So it takes a little bit of melding together to get the front leg to look nice, but it looks really good. I have a couple Yorkies that I do like that, and people just love it because it's short, but yet it doesn't look short.
Great. Okay, Eddie, that was your answer, and Eddie was from Florida. And so hopefully they will get their questions, their answers from the recording coming up. And our hour is almost ending, Jody. So let's go over to where can people come and see you at the trade show world outside of Australia. We'll stay in the U.S. for now. Where are you going to be this year?
I am in Pasadena in February at Groom Expo West, and I'll be doing 4 hours of seminars on the Friday. So I won't be in my booth Friday at all. I'll be speaking most of the day. Saturday and Sunday, I'm actually going to have two booths. So I'm going to be doing demonstrations in my booth all day Saturday and Sunday. So anybody that is competing out there and you want to bring me your contest dog when you're done and you want me to help you tweak it up after you're competed, I'll be happy to do that. So I've invited people to come to my booth to do that. If you have, you know, any demo dogs, I'm still looking for a couple more demo dogs. So anybody that's interested in that, they can email me or send me a Facebook message. I would love to do that. So that's Groom Expo West. Then I'll be in Atlanta at the Atlanta Pet Fair. So I'll be there. I'll be at Intergroom this year. Where else will I be? Then I'll be in Hershey, of course. So other than that, I'll be in Canada, and I'll also be out in Australia. So
just another year on the road there for Jody.
Yeah.
And you'll be doing the Rags to Riches judges for us again.
Yep, I'll be doing that too. That's always fun.
Okay. Now, Jody, why don't you go ahead and give them your website where they can come find things?
Okay. My website is jodimurphy.net. That's J-O-D-I, murphy.net. And all my products are there. I've got new inventory of grooming apparel coming in here any day. So I have my sleeveless vests will be available in Pasadena. I'm hoping to pick them up next week. So I have a whole new inventory of them coming in new colors, and my short sleeve combos will be coming in new colors. My women's combos. I have a lot of new stuff coming in for these upcoming shows. So everything will be on my website. Hopefully by the time I get back from Pasadena, I'll have all my new inventory listed. So, yeah, everything is, it's moving right along. So,
yeah, great. I'm glad you brought it up. I was just going to remind you about the apparel. So I'm glad you got that in there and covered. All right. I want to thank you for being here. I'll be working with you on Rags to Riches, so I'll be checking in with you then. But otherwise, we appreciate your coming and helping everybody with all these great, helpful grooming hints here, and wish you the best for the very busy year.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, Stephen. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Hey, you're welcome. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye,
everybody. Bye-bye. Remember, we have the contest going on. Even right now, get in on the Kinchy Shears contest. Win one of $300 prizes toward Kinchy Shears. And in the second half of February, all the way through March, just come along the board, post any kind of question, reply, whatever, and you'll be entered in the Wall Bravura Clippers Pay It Forward contest. Should be fun, and you'll get to award a clipper and have one. So thank you for being here. We will have shows again next weekend.